Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Tuesday, the 6th of November, 2018. Happy Election Day to all of our friends here in the United States. Let's get to a couple of issues of the day. With me this morning, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And somehow I skipped ahead, and I was going to say, because it's Wednesday, we have John Martellaro with us. But even though it's Tuesday, I have John with me anyway. Hi, John.
Surprise. Here I am. Good morning. and Brian, good morning to you.
And likewise.
And I want to talk to you guys about a couple of things that I think are interesting. The first is with Apple Watch. I'm going to point out one of the things that I use with the new Apple Watch. I bought a new Apple Watch. I went from Series 0 to Series 4. So it's basically like I got a brand new device in a bunch of different ways. You both were upgrading from previous versions, though, correct?
Yes. Yes, I went from a Series 0 also to a Series 4.
0 to 4. And Brian?
Series 2.
2 to 4. Okay. So walkie-talkie is a thing that I use often. I don't know how much mileage you all are getting out of it, but it's a thing that I really like, that I think is a little, I think it's fun. It's one of those things. It sort of reminds me of Animoji or Memoji, where it's sort of a ridiculous fun feature, but I do use it all the time, and I could see people upgrading just to get walkie talkie and go full Dick Tracy by talking to somebody on their arm without having to dial a phone number first or anything. So that's a thing that I have used a lot, but honestly, the thing I think I use the most is still talking to my arm, but it's not having to say hey to her in order to set a reminder or send a text message or something. So, Brian, what are your favorite features in the new, whether it's hardware or software, what are your favorite features in the latest version?
For me, it's just gotta be the big display. Like, I still marvel at the size of the display every time I look down at my wrist and gaze adoringly at my new Apple Watch. I've been enjoying that. I know that it's not for everyone. It is absolutely not for everyone. I love the infographic watch face with all the complications.
Me too.
And the display is just got to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think being able to have all those things around the corners and then more stuff in the middle is a thing that I very much enjoy.
I wish the text for activity data was bigger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that, because I do too.
That's like my biggest quibble. But anyway, yeah, I enjoy that watch face. I enjoy the size of the display on Apple Watch 4. I love how little bezel there is compared to previous devices, and look forward to further improvements in that area in future years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, digging it.
I saw them tell me how they were going to put so much more information in there, and how they were going to do all this great stuff with a 2 millimeter difference in the screen size. And I have to say, I didn't believe it. And then when mine showed up, I was a believer. And like you, I still look at it and go, I can't believe I get to look at all this stuff at the same time. John, how about you?
The thing I love about the Apple Watch Series 4 the most is the speed. Compared to the Series 0, it's night and day. It took an eternity to upgrade the Series 0 or to unpair it and repair it. And there was that clock face where you have the white ticks around the outside as mm-hmm. it does its updates. You could grow old watching that. And I really like the infographic as well.
But hold on, John. Can I point out that the Apple Watch Series 4 is definitely faster than Apple Watch Series 2, but I guess there was a pretty big speed difference between the Series 2 in the Series 0 as well. I mean, you guys are, you skipped two
many
generations.
Iterations, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I...
Thank you, Siri.
What drove me into it, and I think it was probably time anyway, what drove me into it is that I couldn't put Watch OS 5 on my Series 0. Yeah. So that was like an instant decision.
Well, part of it for me, I had two reasons for upgrading, and the first was I use the workout feature all the time, and when I would go to start a workout, it would go, hold on, give me a minute. And it would take it forever just to start the workout. And then the other was battery life. Like, I couldn't go all day. I would have to put my watch on to charge at, like, at lunchtime while I was just sitting to make sure that I had enough juice to get through the day. And the battery life is better even than the Series 3. And I know this because I used to occasionally, like, be out with friends or something, and I'd look at my watch, and it would, you know, because it would buzz at me, and it was at 10%. I'd be like, oh, and there goes my watch. And then I have a friend that would always look at his percentage and look at me and be like, 43% or 51% or whatever it was. And so at one point he said, I don't think my watch charged last night, and it just died. And I looked at mine, and I'm like, 68%. It was... And it, like, consistently, my watch has a higher percentage at the end of the day than his does. And I think, so it's been very fun to sort of reverse troll him over that.
I'm running about 85% remaining charge when I go to bed.
Yeah, I tend to be.
Even if I walk.
Wow.
Even if I take a walk.
Yeah, I'm hitting 60, like last night specifically was 67%.
Yeah, I'm usually a little more than half.
And so here's what happened to me with Series 2. So for the first couple of months, I was pretty consistently able to get 2 full days of use.
Mm-hmm.
And then it dipped below two days. It was definitely more than a day, but it wasn't 2 full days. So like that new, there's something going on, and I'm seeing the same thing with the Series 4, where my first, you know, month or so with it has been, The battery is lasting quite a while, and I'm already starting to see that it's getting harder for me to get to the end of that second day.
Okay.
So I think there's something going on. I think that this is a function of the battery that is within this watch, and that, like, after 2 months, you're not going to get 2 days out of it.
Interesting.
Can I rant?
I don't know, John. Can you?
This is a digital advanced watch, accurate to 50 milliseconds, according to Tim Cook. Where the heck is hours, minutes, and seconds on some digital display, like astronomy, maybe? Or just a modular hours, minutes, seconds? There's a new hours, minutes, seconds that you can get onto the infographic. If you replace the calendar on the top middle, mm-hmm. you can get hours, minutes, seconds on a display that already has a sweep second hand, so that's a little redundant. And then over on the modular display, there is no complication that gives you minutes and seconds. You can buy a $9 Seiko at Walmart, and it'll have hours, minutes, and seconds.
I don't know. I think you're nerding it wrong, John.
See, if you just wear it upside down, like I do, maybe you'd be in better shape.
I actually do hear you, John. It's surprising that that's not an option.
This is amazing.
Tune in tomorrow when we explain apple.com/feedback to John.
I've tried. I've been beating Apple up ever since the Series 0. It hasn't worked.
Yeah, the if I had a nitpick, I think my nitpick would be that like the stand dialogues, and I think there's one other, don't fit on the screen. And I understand that I have the smaller size watch, but I would think they would, if they're smart enough to be able to show it as the right color on my iPhone when I go to manage stuff on my watch, I feel like they should be able to also tell the dialogues to fit on the screen that I have. And I just got a bigger screen, which is even bigger because they shrunk the bezel and gave me 2 millimeters extra space, and they still can't get that dialogue to fit on my watch. It used to fit on the Series 0. It didn't scroll off the bottom of the screen, and I wish that it did not.
Suspect this will be fixed in the next update.
I hope so. Last night I got the 5.1.1 update installed, and I haven't had it bother me about standing up yet today, so I don't know yet.
Did you do 5.1, Brian, without getting bricked? I assume you did.
I have not updated 5.1.1.
I did not either. I waited. So I think 5.1.1 might be a lot safer.
Yeah, I did it, and it took no time. It was flawless. I don't know. It was my first system update since I got the new watch, and so I know I was pleased. I'm like, let me just charge everything up and make sure I got my stand ring in, because it's going to take like an hour. No, it didn't.
Yeah, I was about to say, to John's earlier point, did you enjoy it not taking all day?
I really did. It's not my favorite thing about it because I haven't run a ton of updates yet, literally one. But I do enjoy the lack of having to emotionally prepare for everything first. That is a nice thing about having this watch. So I definitely I definitely prefer
installing
that.
Installing now. Just FYI.
Oh, it might be done before we sausage. Finish recording.
I'm making this sausage now.
Hey.
Right now. Right. All right. Now.
I can't wait to see how that turns out. But in the meantime, I'm going to tell people about our sponsors this week. First, we have OpsGenie, and incidents are inevitable, and they all come down to how your company responds. Incidents require complex coordination between teams who put out fires. Getting timely alerts is critical when those incidents occur, and that's why there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. OpsGenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. They have the power to respond quickly and efficiently and get the right people notified. Visit OpsGenie, OpsGenie.com to sign up and get a free company account and add up to 5 team members. Also this week, we are sponsored by Jamf Now. Jamf Now helps you set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices on demand. They support macOS and iOS devices like the iMac, the iPhone, and the iPad, and all that new hardware that just got announced. You can manage all that with Jamf Now, too. And they will let you keep track of operating system versions, serial numbers, email settings, Wi-Fi settings, and lots more. You can add 3 devices for free for life, and additional devices just cost $2 a month. Head over to the Jamf website and sign up for your free account today. And that is jamf.com/TDO. All right. And the next thing I want to talk about today is I want to talk to you guys about the iPad, specifically the new iPad Pro, and how it's a computer or it's not, and it really depends on who you ask, or it doesn't. Just to put that out there, my stance is that it basically depends on your value of computer, and that's the thing that has frustrated me about reading all these people who say, well, actually the iPad Pro isn't a computer, because yeah, it kind of is. What do you guys think, John?
Of course it's a computer. It fulfills all the requirements of a computer. It's definitely a computer. It just has some different ways of doing things. What remains the sticking point for me, and that is text editing. I still find that the ability to bring up the magnifying glass and edit text and move around in various places is still sort of time-consuming for me. And when I'm ready to really rip and write, mm-hmm. I prefer a mouse and BB Edit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just better for me, but better for me isn't necessarily better for everyone.
Well, so. There are preferences. Like, are you talking about typing on the screen, or are you talking about typing on an external keyboard?
I'm talking about typing on either one and then trying to edit the text.
Okay.
By activating the magnifying glass and getting it in the right spot.
Yeah.
And editing. It's just, it seems like an awkward process.
Well,
so it slows me down.
I understand completely. Brian, how about you?
I like what you had to say in your piece, and I agree with what you have to say in your piece. I do not want to do my work on an iPad. There is a lot. So not only do I completely agree with John about the text, I think that the typing and editing in particular is a lot easier with keyboard and mouse or trackpad.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's at least for me. And doing any kind of real data, real text manipulation, is easier on with a keyboard and mouse or trackpad. And furthermore, for the kinds of things that I personally do, which kind of plays into your piece, the ability to quickly switch between apps, mm-hmm. and quickly interact between those apps, and to have, I'm looking at my screen right now, and I can see, I can probably see Windows from a dozen apps.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that John doesn't work that way, but I mean, my point is that
oh, I've got lots of apps open.
That he just can. Don't, they like, just don't touch.
Yeah. Mine are touching and overlapping and everything. And I find that to be a lot faster than trying to switch between apps on iPad. But that's just the way I work. And it's for my particular workflow as well as my particular work history, as well as my particular job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's just me. When it comes to consumption, I've made this point with Jeff Kelly. I spend a lot of time on my iPad every day,
mm-hmm.
but it's mostly in a consumption mm-hmm. mode, not a production mode.
Sure, but you would be doing that consumption on a computer, on a MacBook Pro or on an iMac, either way.
But so, a lot of that consumption is superior on the iPad. That's why right. the iPad is a superior yeah. device for me.
Right. And that's my question is, do you prefer it on the iPad as opposed to on something a bit more traditionally
if
defined
I'm using
as a computer?
My iPad, it's because I want to. And if I'm using my computer, it's because I want to. I mean, like, you know, talk about like mm-hmm. a first world problem. You know, smorgasbord, right? You know, I'm lucky. I've got a desktop Mac. I've got a MacBook Air if I need to go to a coffee shop because you know mm-hmm. poor Brian, and I probably have my iPad with me when I'm at the coffee shop too, mm-hmm. and I've got just in case I need it, maybe I've got my iPhone in my pocket. That makes me extraordinarily lucky.
Yes,
and it also makes me not representative, not mm-hmm. necessarily representative.
You know, I think we're nudging into a kind of a broader concept here. Brian, when you were talking about the way you use your different devices, I'm the same way. When I want to do something in a certain way, like I want to go to IMDb, I find the layout on my iPad 12-inch really nice,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to trying to read it on a Safari on a Mac. Or when I'm looking at the weather or I'm using it as a second screen in front of the TV, it's easy to have it sit in my lap and touch and tap.
Mm-hmm.
But those tasks that Brian was talking about, you know, editing, creating, working in WordPress, mm-hmm. doing details of drawing and editing and creation. So, you know, we reach for our Macs because we're comfortable with those tools. But in your article, you gave some examples of, you know, things that you can do on your iPad. I wonder if there isn't some sort of higher level way to approach what we've all been talking about in terms of a Venn diagram or something. Because you gave three examples of how you could easily use an iPad for creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other examples where you wouldn't necessarily want to use an iPad for creativity, especially if you were working with multiple 27-inch screens or something.
Right.
Doing video.
And there's, know, I mean, there's certainly...
Movie post-production. I mean, you know, theatrical right. movie post-production with... professional tools on a big right. screen. So,
and that's not the same thing. And I totally get that.
Yeah. But is there a way to kind of conceptualize that, or instead of specific cases, can we back into a sort of a all inclusive kind of metaphor that describes why we feel the way we feel?
Well,
I don't know.
I want to also point out that, I use my iPad for loads and loads of stuff. One of the biggest things I do with mine is I have an Apple wireless keyboard, and I will set it in my lap, and I will put the screen elsewhere, as weird as that sounds, because I'm pretty good at typing without having to look at my hands, and I'm pretty good at doing that accurately. So I do a podcast about a TV show, and in order to take notes during that TV show, I just have the keyboard in my lap. I don't have the light of the screen distracting me or notifications coming in, you know, that I need to start checking on, and then I'm derailed from watching the show. And so I will hook it to my iPad and turn the iPad screen away from me so I can't see it. And then I will type my little notes and observations and just put a couple of line breaks in between. And I've got all those notes for later of that thing that I thought about in the middle of the show when that thing happened to that other person and wasn't that terrible or great or whatever. So that's one of the ways that I use this in order to get the screen out of the equation. And one of the things that I have done is recorded a few podcasts using my iPad so that I can get the laptop out of the way or eliminate Skype from the equation if I get the opportunity to sit with somebody in person. So that's two ways that I've done it and done, you know, end to end production with my iPad. And that was, I was originally doing that with an iPad Air, and now I have the current, until a week ago, iPad Pro. And I did all the same stuff on that one. And it's been great. So that's part of why I get frustrated when somebody sits down and says, well, this isn't actually a computer. But if you're a person who does some stuff on the web, a couple of apps here and there, then this absolutely could be your new computer. And instead of having to be that big monolith that sits in the corner of the kitchen that nobody really wants to use because it's old and slow and clunky, and now I'm staring at the corner of the kitchen, you can take it with you and sit in front of the television or sit on the couch or the patio, you know, and be somewhere else and do all of those same things with the computer that you can carry around with you. And that's part of why I get aggravated by these reviews where somebody said, you know, it would be like Brian saying, well, obviously, like, Kelly's use case is invalid because it's not the same as mine, and I can't do the things that I want to do the way I want to do them if I don't have a keyboard and a mouse attached to the screen.
I'd like to point out that I did not say that.
No, it's an example.
Nor did I think that.
No. No, we all know better. But it would be like you saying that, like, this is the way that you do things, and therefore all other points of view are invalid, which is what some of these reviews are saying, and that's the part that I have found frustrating about it, which is why there's a piece for you to go read at Mac Observer today. Because I think there's a lot of room for the iPad to be people's new computer. I think this is the new iPad Air. This is your ancillary device. This is the thing that you take with you if you're going to be gone for an afternoon or for a day, maybe two. And, you know, all you really need is to be able to do the bare minimum of stuff that's slightly more than what you want to do on your phone, or you need a little bit more screen than what you have on your phone. Then you take your iPad with you, and it's completely valid and totally does the job.
What about those people who can't afford an iPad and all I can afford is a Mac and a phone? I run across that situation where people are a little bit reluctant to fall into that.
Sure.
Mechanism.
Well, yeah. Generally the people that I'm talking about are somebody who might be in the market for a new machine. Maybe that Mac is a gumdrop iMac, or that Mac is, you know, an eMac, or some previous iteration. It's 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, 10 years old. Whether it's a laptop or a desktop, or, you know, an old Mac tower. It's one of those cheese grater 50 pound monstrosities. Whatever it is, like, if you're in the market for a new computer, an iPad can be a valid option for you, depending what you're doing with the one that you have now.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You have a legacy machine, you have a Time Machine backup, you have a library of data, you've got financial records that you want, you went paperless, you've got a whole lot of documents on your Mac, and they're backed up with Carbon Copy Cloner, and now you're thinking about changing out your MacBook Air for an iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. What do you do with all this legacy data?
Well, if it's Carbon Copy Cloner, you know, it's just an exact duplicate of your hard drive. So you just hang that off your network somewhere, and you can get to it if you need it.
If you're buying a new iPad Pro and you want to sell your old Mac and get rid of it, how do you handle this transition to your new life on an iPad, which doesn't have, you know, a facility for archiving a large amount of data?
Well, it depends on what you're doing.
iCloud backup for your iPad right now, it maybe is not going to do the whole job, or you've got a lot of learning, or you got a lot of data to move into the cloud. That's a whole process.
That's a whole other piece that John's going to write, and we're going to talk about on an episode of TDO in the future when we sort all of this out.
My heart sinks when I think about trying to do that.
Oh, we'll figure it out, John. I promise. I can help you make this a reality. So John and I have to go discuss the next piece he's going to write for Mac Observer. And I'm going to thank both of you for being here. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Indeed. Thanks for having us.
Is your watch done?
It is done. Yep. I am putting it back on.
All right. Go get those stand minutes. And John, as always, thanks for joining me today.
It's nice for having me. Thank you for having me. Blah, blah, blah. I'll learn to talk someday here. Bye, Kelly. Bye, Brian.
Machine learning is becoming a reality, everybody. This has been the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast for Tuesday, November 6th, 2018. I will talk to you tomorrow. And until then, be excellent to each other.